literally would drive up to places that looked like they might carry a gourmet candy, walked in, introduced myself, gave them samples, asked to speak to whoever makes decisions about new candies, and more often than not, they said, we'll give it a try.
This is Can Do, Lessons from Savvy Montana Entrepreneurs, a podcast that explores why Montana leads the nation in entrepreneurship and business startups. I'm Arnie Sherman. Throughout her 25-year technology career, Robin Bacay's hobby delighted family and friends, making homemade caramels. When telecoms tanked in 2001, so did her job, and suddenly Robin wondered if this hobby might also become her livelihood. Well, it has become that and much more. Bacay's Confections, manufactured in Bozeman, Montana, has won several national awards. You can find their chewy chocolate, chipotle, or Celtic sea salt caramels on the shelves of over 1,000 gourmet stores. Today on Can Do Lessons from Savvy Montana Entrepreneurs, Robin serves up stories and insights from 17 years as head of her own confectionery business. Production support for this Can Do podcast comes from the Dennis and Phyllis Washington Foundation, dedicated to investing in people to improve the quality of their lives, and from the Greater Montana Foundation, encouraging communications on issues, trends, and values of importance to Montanans, and from Blackfoot, providing communication solutions for Montana businesses, plus opportunities like C2M Beta, an innovation lab aimed at helping startups thrive. C2MBeta.com. Robin, it's good to have you on the show today.
Thank you for having me.
For our listeners, Robin is joining us today from Peak Recording in Bozeman, Montana. So first off, why caramels?
Ah, it's a good question. I've always enjoyed fine confections. And somebody was mentioning almond roca and how much they like it. And something prompted me to go home and try and make it. And it's rare that I attempt to cook something and literally have to throw it out. But that was the occasion. It was a complete disaster. And one page past the almond roca recipe in a cookbook I happened to have in my kitchen was a recipe for caramel. And I thought, well, I am not ending my candy-making career on a mess like this. So one week later, I decided I'd get the ingredients and try my hand at caramel instead. And it exceeded my expectations. And I brought it into work and shared it with everybody. And from the get-go, on the first attempt, I actually modified the recipe slightly because I cook a lot and I'm familiar, very comfortable in the kitchen. And one part of the recipe made me a little uncomfortable, so I modified it, and everybody loved it. Next time I made it the way it said in the cookbook, and a coworker said, you know, I like the first batch better. I thought, yeah, so did I. And that was the beginning of adding, taking away, modifying it, and I enjoy cooking for my friends and family, and caramel became a part of my repertoire.
And what makes a caramel as opposed to like a nougat or a taffy or other a soft, chewy candy?
Sure. The essentials are butter, cream, and sugar. And how it's cooked, how long it's cooked, is going to have a strong bearing on the flavor that you get because the sugars are going to end up evolving along with the dairy proteins. Cooking butter, sugar, and cream for a good long time or for the right amount of time, depending on your taste and your preference, is the heart of caramel. We've never had success in doing it without corn syrup or tapioca syrup or some other syrup also. The sugars are complicated, and a small tweak in a recipe can have a very big bearing on texture and flavor. But taffy, I believe, doesn't have any dairy products. And nougat, I believe, has egg in it. So I think it's primarily the ingredients that make a difference between one confection and another.
And how many are you producing and distributing from Bozeman, Montana now?
We make 13 varieties of caramel. We package them in, oh my goodness, probably some teen different varieties of sizes and types of packaging. So when you multiply that all together, I think it's 100 different SKUs, but it's 13 varieties of caramel.
You do produce enough to distribute to 1,000 gourmet stores.
That is correct.
So do you manufacture any other confections or is it strictly caramels?
No, we focus all of our attention on caramel and caramel sauce. We think if we were to do anything else, it would divide our attention and our energies and our focus. But by focusing strictly on caramel, with our goal being to make the best caramel anyone's ever had, period, we think that by having that be our sole focus, it helps us to continually raise the bar. We've improved our recipe 5 times in the 17 years we've been in business, and we look forward to the next improvement.
Is there a customer favorite, or do you have a favorite among the 13?
The customer favorite is definitely Celtic Sea Salt. I enjoy our Celtic Sea Salt a lot, but I probably would give the Chipotle, the spicy one, and the salted mocha an edge for me personally.
And how many employees are you employing now running the company?
Year-round, there are 28 of us. During the holiday season, that number tips just over 70.
And how did this labor of love all begin? Tell us a little bit of the history of what happened 17 years ago that led you to this.
So I was having a fine career in technology. I worked for a company in the photonics industry, and we were about to go public. I was an officer in the company, so I have a very healthy number of stock options, and I believe I'm going to be able to retire soon after we go public. But 3 weeks before the IPO, we were put on hold, and unfortunately, this is the telecom train wreck of 2001, and I had a front row seat. So in 18 months, ILX is going to go through 5 rounds of layoffs, and I'm in one of them. So instead of retiring at 42, I'm unemployed at 42, trying to decide, now what do I do? And the day I was laid off, a woman came in my office and said she was not being laid off. And she mentioned how she had told me numerous times what a faithful employee she was. And she had actually used those terms a number of times. And she said her allegiance actually lied with me, not with the company. Although she was not being laid off, she was proposing we start a business together. I was completely taken by surprise, not expecting this to be the goodbye from her. So she got me thinking about what business might we start. So we put our heads together and thought, what do we do uniquely well? What do we do that's not being done well? And she was a big fan of the caramel I'd been making for friends and family. So we did test markets. My background was in tech. So I needed data to know this was the best. I wasn't interested in bringing a Me Too product along, but if we had reason to believe this was better than what was commercially available, that I could get excited about. So we did blind taste tests in a number of different geographical areas, and 17 out of 18 adults chose our caramel as their favorite over a variety of 3 or 4 others that were commercially available. So we thought, okay, maybe we've got something. So we did a test market to get started, and that came back very positive, and then we went ahead and launched.
So you were in tech for 25 years, and now you've been doing this for 17 years. How does running a consumable food company differ from what your experience had been in the tech industry?
I really enjoy cooking, and I like making people happy. I like making food for them that makes them happy. And so I have a great deal of gratification from all of the happiness our caramel seems to bring people. I enjoyed my career in tech, but I never felt quite as much personal satisfaction in what I was doing in tech. Surprisingly, candy business actually has a lot more science to it than I had expected. My husband and I both have degrees in biology, and we were surprised at how the chemistry of sugars and the chemistry of candy had a big impact on the business. Our shelf life was too short when we first started. It's actually 2 weeks, and that is way too short for a commercial operation. So we went to work understanding the sugars better and trying different things, sort of a cook-and-look approach. We'd make a modification and taste it and see if it tasted as good or better, and then put it in shelf life. And between research that we did, we were able to get some help from MSU, from the local university, Montana State University, from their engineering department in helping us research how to get a longer shelf life without compromising taste or texture. And that's the basis of a number of our improvements to the recipe, was getting a longer shelf life. So the chemistry had a lot more in common with the tech business than I had expected candy to have. I also like small business. Both of the tech businesses I was in were much larger companies, and I really enjoy a smaller, more family company. People we work closely with in the small business, you get very close to them, and it becomes like a family.
So you develop your caramel, you have taste testing, people choose it among a group as their favorite. How did you develop your marketing strategy that now reaches, you know, over 1,000 locations out of little old Bozeman, Montana?
My background, one of the companies that I had spent most of my career with was W.L. Gore & Associates. They make Gore-Tex jackets and Gore-Tex medical devices. And there, our focus, I was in sales for Gore for many years, And our focus was the U.S. market, or I was a part of the team focused on the U.S. market. So I understood a number of things from that, my career background, in how to sell on a national basis, trade shows, marketing materials, your branding. And so I had that background helping me to know how to bring the product to market. We started small. Everything was done with a hands-on and a test market. So I literally drove to the nearby towns, Big Sky, Montana, Livingston, Montana, and then Missoula, Montana, and then expanded to Spokane, Washington, and Denver, Colorado, and literally would drive up to places that looked like they might carry a gourmet candy, walked in, introduced myself, gave them samples, asked to speak to whoever makes decisions about new candies. And more often than not, they said, we'll give it a try. So I'd sell it right there to them on the spot and see where they were going to put it. I'd drive back to the stores that had ordered it to see how it was going, because my background in sales told me I really need to see what they're doing. So if something isn't working, maybe I can see why and give them some suggestions on a better way to merchandise it or the like.
Are you still doing it that same way now?
No, that's how we launched. That helped us test the five niches. There were five market niches we'd identified that our caramel might sell into. Gourmet candies, gourmet food stores, natural food stores, gift shops, and corporate gifts. Those were the five. Oh, no, I'm sorry. The last one wasn't corporate gifts. It was espresso bars. So we had identified those, and by going in and seeing what they were doing, it gave me important information to understand where they succeeded and where they didn't. And a clear pattern came out of that as to which stores were more successful. It was the gourmet markets and the natural food stores were the most successful with it. So then we identified what trade shows those people go to, and the fancy food show. There's one in New York every year and one in San Francisco. And those two shows are the shows most of the buyers go to. So then we attended the trade show once we knew which niches we were most successful in.
Most successful entrepreneurs have to learn how to handle risk. How did you learn how to do that?
I have a great aversion to failing, and I am willing to work really, really hard at not failing. I guess it's probably true of a lot of people. So for me, the risk was mitigated by working hard, working long hours, and learning everything I could, figuring out what was and wasn't working, and being really honest with myself. I still don't know why it wasn't a good compliment at espresso bars. I mean, impulse buy at the register when you're getting a coffee seems like a natural, but it's not a good niche for us. So I guess I was able to mitigate the risk by keeping the original investment small, using test markets to decide to figure out which customers were reordering the product, and then put the bigger investment of the trade show in the right place. Because on a less expensive basis of driving around and visiting customers and seeing what's going on, that helped me to mitigate the risk.
Did you initially finance the operation yourself?
Yes.
And what about expansions over the years? Because I know you've expanded. How has that been financed?
Likewise, we've had to take on very little, almost no debt. We have no debt as a business right now. And most of our time, we've had no debt. We took out a second mortgage on our home when we first started the business to buy our caramel wrapper, our first serious piece of equipment, hoping very much that we would actually have a successful caramel business in addition to a $30,000 caramel wrapper. That was the scariest investment we made. Since then, we've bought much larger pieces of equipment, but it was after knowing we had had enough success that it made sense to add that next level of automation.
When did you know viscerally that this business was going to make it, that it was going to stick?
It was with the first award we won. After our test markets and deciding the fancy food show was the right place to exhibit the product, we went to the show, and there are two awards given out at the show. One of them is decided before the show happens, and we did not win that award. And the second one, one of the magazines that covers the industry sends 17 judges out onto the floor. There are over 3,000 booths in the exhibit hall. It's a very large show. And of those 3,000 booths, there's going to be 17 products awarded based on these 17 judges. Each one is sent out to 1/17th of the floor. And we won one of those awards. And that, to me, told me we had a place in this industry by a non-biased independent judge who was looking for the best product in our section of the floor. And that was a remarkable moment to me. And that was where I knew that, I think that combined with the feedback at the show, combined with the award, that combination just tipped the scale for us.
Was there ever a time in the past 17 years that you thought of giving up, or that this was too big a challenge or too big a task for you?
In the first year, maybe even 2 years, I remember having moments where I'd feel my throat start to close. And I'd think, what have I done? Because you put your name on the product and you're way out there. I mean, everybody you know knows that you have done this and that you've attempted this. And I was very much aware of the statistics on new businesses, and the odds are it's not going to succeed. But I do remember that feeling of my throat closing and just having an awful, awful feeling that this was not a good idea.
Well, it's very daunting. I mean, there are many, many people that you and I both know who have been told, boy, your apple pie is the best apple pie I've ever had, or that ice cream is fantastic. But the thought of making that into a business is a bit, overwhelming. You took that on, and here you are 17 years later, you know, with a successful and continually growing business.
I feel remarkably fortunate on a lot of levels. First, I was fortunate to be laid off, because there is no way I would have started this without that impetus, wanting to make a living here in Bozeman, Montana. And the job options in a small town like this are not expansive. And so I looked into all my other options first, and none of them looked appealing. And I thought, well, okay, let's give this a try. Second, I owe a great deal to Bozeman, Montana. Bozeman has been remarkably good to our little business, especially in the early days. Just about everybody, every store we approached, said, sure, let's give it a try. Montanans are remarkably supportive of one another when one undertakes an entrepreneurial adventure. Being an entrepreneur is a very Montanan thing to do. Don't like your job options? Create one. Montanans are very independent and take care of themselves and each other. So I am grateful to Bozeman and the stores and the consumers in Bozeman for embracing our business and gifting our caramel extensively. And really, we could not have had a more supportive environment.
There are issues of quality control and price control and all those things, and making sure that the retail distribution of your product meets your standards. How do you manage that?
Every day. We were talking in my office this morning about a particular quality issue. It's a minor one, but at the same time, it is a great passion I have, and everyone that works in Bouquet Confections knows that. If I go in the room, the production floor, and say, who here is a part of our quality team? Every hand goes up, and we ask that question often enough to make sure everybody knows everybody's responsible for the quality of the product. We're clear about our expectations. We train continuously. And for better and for worse, I eat caramel every day. I'm not telling how many pieces I've already had today since it's only midday. But some of it's for the sake of testing product, but honestly, the majority is because I love it.
What about pricing around the country? Is there regional fluctuation? Do you set a retail price for the product?
We do not set a retail price for the product. The stores make their own decisions as to how they're going to price it. There's a lot of commonality in pricing, but there is some regional differences. Certain parts of the country are dramatically higher in their price than others. And then you've got a store with that prefers lower margins and higher volume, and they're very good value.
Do you sell your product through Amazon and other online retailers?
We sell our product to retail stores that resell it. Some of them are strictly Amazon vendors, so they'll buy it from us and they'll resell it on Amazon. We do not sell directly to Amazon. We also sell a lot of our caramel on our website, and that's usually people that have tried it before, maybe at a store while they were on vacation or a gift from someone, and maybe there's not a store near them, so then they'll go on our website and order it there, or they can go on Amazon and order it there.
And over the time that it's been sold on Amazon, has that been a challenge for you, or has it been an asset for you?
Both. I think it's first and foremost an asset. Amazon makes it very easy to order something, and I think most of us have experienced that. It's quick, it's easy, and it's the speed with which I can order anything on Amazon exceeds any other website, including my own. That's the plus. So we want to make it easy for our customers. If they want to order through Amazon, they can. On our website, we do quite a bit of business, though, also, because everything there is custom. So let's say there's three varieties of our caramel you like the most. You can order a bag with those three in the mix. We customize almost everything. You pick the bow color, you pick the size. We just let you build it the way you'd like to. Because we think when you're buying something gourmet, you should be able to select exactly what you want. Where on Amazon, they have the most popular offerings that we make are on Amazon.
Robin, if you had it all to do over again, is there anything that you would do differently?
Yes. We have area leaders. That's a lot like a manager, but we prefer the term leader. So we have three area leaders in our business, a production leader, an admin leader, and a sales and marketing leader. And all major decisions I make in conjunction with these three ladies. They're real bright. They bring in different perspectives. And I prefer, well, I think four heads are better than one. I wish that in the earlier days, I had gotten more input from outside of our little business when there were only three of us and the experience base of some of my employees weren't deep in business or in marketing or in how what the future of the business would look like or how to grow it. I wish I had had an advisory board then because I so value these three ladies and their input and their help that I wish I'd had that earlier on.
What lessons would you share with someone looking to start a new food products business?
First, I think that the specialty food industry is a great place for entrepreneurs. Second, I think start small and make sure you have reordering customers. That will help you, at a minimal expense, modify your business model. What are you selling? What's the packaging? What's the price point? Who's ordering it? Who's reordering it? What problems do they have? What would they like to see you do differently? Get those adjustments made while you're still quite small. Only after you've got that dialed in and you know who's reordering your product, then pick the right method of expansion. In our case, it was the fancy food show. For most food entrepreneurs that are looking at a national or even a large piece of the U.S. Market, the fancy food show is the place to go. It is a remarkable environment, and the stores there are everything from a small co-op in a small town all the way to Costco, and everybody in between goes to the fancy food show to look for new products. So it's a phenomenal opportunity. But go with a product that you know is dialed in, that's the right size, the right price, the right packaging, the right brochure, the right marketing avenue, and the like.
You're 17 years into your business operation. What are the challenges you face now, and how are they different from the initial challenges?
2 years ago, we implemented our quality system. We are audited to a GMP standard, that's Good Manufacturing Practices. And what it means is that we are complying with food safety regulations at a very appropriate level. It's much more stringent than what the health department requires. It's the next level up. And it's all about food safety. We've done very well there. We've had two audits in the last 2 years and did very well in both audits. We want to add this year another component to the quality system focused on product quality, which is related to the question you asked earlier about how do we maintain the quality of the product. We'd like to get a whole nother level of our work instructions, our standard operating procedures, our visual aids, our trainings dialed in specifically to maintaining the quality of the product. Not that I don't enjoy eating it every day. I do. But we want a better system than that.
Well, it seems that one of the things that you've learned over this period of time is there's a lot more to running this business than just having a good product.
Oh, yeah. Yes. You could say that 10 times and not be overstating it.
And what does the future look like for you?
Well, our landlord has been working on an expansion for us. We've got a 12,000 square foot addition on the north end of our building that was supposed to get trusses today, but it's windy here in Bozeman today. So therefore, they're holding off on the crane and the trusses going up till tomorrow. We hope to be moving into that facility or expanding into it in the next couple of months. And that would be great. We're growing, and the space we're in is a little too tight. So it'd be nice to have the additional space. As I mentioned, we're looking forward to the expansion of our quality system. We've got a couple of ideas from a growing our customer base standpoint that we'll be trying this year too, and look forward to watching those play out.
Robin, it's been delightful talking with you. It's made me hungry, and as soon as we get off the air, I'm going to try a couple of caramels.
Thank you so much. My pleasure.
I appreciate your listening to Can Do, Lessons from Savvy Montana Entrepreneurs, produced by Autumn Barnes and Beth Ann Austin in association with Montana Public Radio. For comments, recommendations for future guests, or general information, please go to mtpr.org. There you can also find previous guests' contact information and content from all our shows. Listen next time to Can Do when our guest will be Will Price of Next Frontier Capital in Bozeman, Montana, discussing the challenges of funding startups in Montana and the Rocky Mountain West. I'm Arnie Sherman, wishing you peace and prosperity. Production support for this Can Do podcast comes from the Dennis and Phyllis Washington Foundation, dedicated to investing in people to improve the quality of their lives, and from the Greater Montana Foundation, encouraging communications on issues, trends, and values of importance to Montanans. And from Blackfoot, providing communication solutions for Montana businesses, plus opportunities like C2M Beta, an innovation lab aimed at helping startups thrive. C2MBeta.com.